सर्ववेदान्तगम्यं तं दक्षिणास्यं सदाशिवं निर्मलज्ञानदातारम् वंदे देशिकविग्रहं जनिप्रतिमृतिहेतुर्योऽस्य विश्वस्य नित्यम् अमृतजडविरोधी शाश्वतोऽनन्तरूपः श्रवणमननयोग्यो जीवरूपादभिन्नो पितरतु मयि बुद्धिं शङ्करोऽयं यतीन्द्रः पितरतु मयि बुद्धिं शङ्करोऽयं यतीन्द्रः ॐ भद्रं discussing the mental culture. Yesterday we saw a cultured mind is basically a mind oriented towards forgiveness. Natural and uncultured mind seeks normal self-expression. We found it is very difficult to conclude it. Natural propensities or emotions are very strong. Not only from childhood, but even much earlier than that, life before life we have been practicing only these normal propensities. The moment a person criticizes you, something in you raises its hood to strike back. If a person slaps you, it is but natural for you to react. In that natural way, the aggressive thing. Often people think that it is weakness which brings about the idea of forgiveness. They forget that any weakling can easily lose his temper. It requires tremendous strength to control it. Wisdom is not for weaklings. Upanishad lays down clearly, Nayam Atma Balahinena Labhyah. A person who doesn't have strength in every fiber of his being, he has to be strong physically, he has to be strong emotionally, he has to be strong intellectually. It is this strength, this bala, which is able to stop these normal anchorings. Cultured person should be able to use his ideal in provocative interpersonal relationships. Most of the time when the situation is not provocative, we are able to act ne verince bırakıyor. Often enough a person says, these ideals are good, but they are impractical. They are impractical because you do not have the strength to practice it. You do not have the bala. How does this bala come? What gives you this strength? Oppression is based on the concept of egocentricity and selfishness. As long as you consider your body as the center of the universe, as if this is all that exists, you are egocentric and it is next to impossible for you to do anything else but follow the natural propensities, the natural emotions. But when you realize that this is not your real self, you change from egocentricity to cosmocentricity or geocentricity. God becomes the center of your life. Your center is shifted from this body to the whole cosmos. Just as you are controlling this body, God is controlling the whole universe. An egocentric person is basically a cancerous patient. If you ask a doctor, what is a cancer? Certain cells of the body decide to proliferate, divide, multiply, without caring for the good of the whole body. Those cells have become egocentric. They are thinking of their own proliferation at the cost of the whole body. That is all that we mean by a cancerous growth. All cells in the body are multiplying, but they are within the control of a central system which utilizes this proliferation for the good of the whole body. When certain cells refuse it, either they have to be removed from the body, or if they are successful, they are able to remove the body. The death ensues. Death follows. Similarly, this whole universe is one cosmos. It is one unit. In English we have the word universe. The whole world is one verse. Just as any poetic formation has a central theme, the poetry may diversify in many ways, but it comes back to the major thesis, what the poet is trying to convey. The world is also a universe, it is one verse. God is trying to convey something out of this verse. Ordinary versifier or a poet is able to convey the ideas only through words. But Shiva is omnipotent. The moment he writes a verse, it becomes a drama. It is told in the scriptures, Rishinam Punaratyana, those who have the strength of character, those who are the rishis, they write a thing and the incidences follow. In the case of ordinary people, an event takes place and it is recorded in history. In the case of an ordinary versifier, an ordinary poet, he writes something and it remains only in words. But the godly people, they write it out, and it is enacted in the universe. It is enacted outside. If it is true of Adhyana Krishna, how much will it be truer for that Ekarshi, the controller of the whole universe? So actually, we are part of this one-verse universe. We start feeling that we have a separate existence of our own. So from cosmocentricity, from deocentricity, from God-centeredness, from universal centeredness, we direct our attention only to self-assertion, to ego-centeredness. Devotion to God, love to God, is basically to develop this cosmocentricity. Out of this follows love. Love and God are synonymous. In his famous work, Tirumandiram, Tirumandiram says that love for God and love for fellow being is the whole of religion, is the whole of Shaivism. He says, in a nutshell, if you want to say what is a Shaiva religion, it is love for Shiva and love for all that he has created for all beings. The moment we become deocentric, cosmocentric, this love becomes our nature and hatred ceases to be. Love conquers. Hatred is always defeated. So the Upanishad says, yastu sarvani bhutani atmanyevam pashyati sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tato navijugupsati. Navijugupsati. A wise man never hates anything, never looks down upon anything, because the wise man perceives all beings as not different from his real self. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmanyevam pashyati. He sees all beings not different from his own real self. Sarvabhuteshu chatmanam. He sees that my real self is existing not only in this body-mind complex, but all the body-mind complexes. It is the same supreme consciousness which is controlling all beings. So the question of hatred, the question of looking down upon someone, never crosses his mind. Even to the person who is ready to hit him in every possible way. Acharya Shankara was staying in Sri Shaila, what is nowadays known as Nagarjun Sagar. In that vicinity there is a temple. There were certain sects there who believed in sacrificing human beings. One of them came, pretended to have become disciple, served Shankara, and after he had become somewhat familiar, one day he approached him and said, there is a great siddhi which I want to attain. It can be attained sacrificing, either an omniscient wise person or a crowned king. It is impossible for me to get a crowned king to sacrifice. But you are an omniscient wise person. If you will be kind enough to get ready to be sacrificed, I will be able to attain what I want to attain through certain siddhis. First, of course, Acharya Shankara tried to tell him that these things do not lead anywhere. These are wrong theories. One never gets anything by these means, by these rituals. The man started saying, your philosophy is very high, I can't understand it. I only want your head, that is all. Will you be kind enough to give it to me? Acharya Shankara realized that this man cannot understand, that he is on a wrong path. But he has asked, my head, let me give it to him, because he can't understand. So he said, don't talk about it to anybody else. Come to me in the early hours of the morning when I am alone. Because if my disciples come to know about it, they will harm you. But at that time, I will be sitting for meditation and I have prohibited everybody to come there at that time. So you come and take me and sacrifice. Of course, it was not to be the Lord's wish. He came but was unsuccessful, was not able to get it. Acharya Shankara was there, but as luck would have it, one of the other disciples was also ready there, having guessed something about it, and thereby the person could not attain what he wanted, whatever that may be. We must endeavor to be patient in supporting the defects and infirmities of others. It is this which Acharya Shankara is trying to convey by this particular act. He does not merely criticize the defects or the infirmities, but he is able to be patient with that infirmity, even in supporting the defects. If you must have it, you can have it, though it is not the proper ideal. You are on a wrong path, but I am not going to condemn you. This thing comes out of this realization that even this person has that divine spark in him. It is this which changes all our actions, all our thought patterns. That is why the Upanishad goes on to say, yat cittastanmayo bhavati dehyam etat sanatana. What makes a man is his citta, his conviction. Whatever is your conviction, you become completely identified with that conviction. Guhyam etat sanatanam. This is the eternal secret. Whenever you are convinced of a thing, you identify yourself with it. It becomes your nature. After all, even with this body, you are convinced that I am this body. No matter how much the scriptures say, you are not the body.
The scriptures may say any amount of things. It is very interesting. A person comes and says, haven't the scriptures told that there are varnas? A Brahmin is born a Brahmin? I tell them, yes, the scriptures have told it. But haven't the scriptures also told that you are not the body? He says, oh, that is a different matter. Scriptures say both things. But because you are convinced that you are body, you are able to accept that particular version. But where the scriptures lay down that you are beyond the body, you say, let that go. That is a different matter. Yattittastanmayo bhavati viryametat sanatanam. This, the Upanishad says, is the eternal truth, the eternal secret. We often forget that it is due to our conviction that we are in a particular state of existence. Chittasya hi prasadena hanti karma shubhatvam prasannamatmanistritva sukham avyayam ashnati. The Upanishad goes on to say, chittasya hi prasadena, it is the quiet mind, prasannamatma. As long as mind is completely agitated, you are convinced of an agitated mind to remain agitated. But once your mind becomes quiet, leaves off agitation, it destroys the effect of virtue and vice. Chittasya hi prasadena hanti karma shubhatvam. Whether it is shubha or ashubha, whether it is virtue or vice, you are able to transcend it. Once you are able to make your mind cosmocentric, geocentric, once you are able to get out of the egocentricity, all actions lose their effect. Atmanistritva. Because then you become established in your inner real self, the Pratyagatma. And once you are established there, Sukham Avyayam Ashnute, you are able to get that joy which never leaves you. Avyaya. Vaya means an expenditure. All joys become less and less with time. But this joy of Pratyagatma is avyaya. It never becomes less. It is always constant. It comes out. This prasannatma comes out only when you realize that it is not you. Only who are forgiving, but it is you who need to be forgiven. Basically, we are continuously identified with what we call original sin. That is what we call mula vidya, the ignorance. When we realize this sinfulness of our nature, which is much more than the sinfulness which the other persons may be doing, because even knowing what is right, we are continuously going on the wrong path because of this ignorance, this mula-vidya. Jatyandha pati-sankate kavicharan hastavalambam vina yatashchetavate vipatti-vipadam
tatra para anusyaka. Itu says jatyanta. Supposing there is a person who is blind by birth, he is born blind. Therefore he can't see anything. Pati shankate pravichar. Having come on a difficult terrain, perhaps he is going on a mountain range, on a path which is not wide at all, he is going on that path. So he is born blind, he is moving on a very difficult terrain. Not only that, hasta avalambam vina. There is no one to guide him, to hold his hand and show him the way. In such a circumstances, yatashchet avateri patti, he falls down and harms himself. Katrapar adhusyaka. Will anyone find fault with him? Will anyone blame him? Why you fall down like this? But the poet says, my condition is entirely different. Vigvinma satu shastra chakshushi sati kadya pradipe sati smitate swamini marka darshini sati shabhri matatte vaya. He says, but my condition is such shastra chakshushi sati. I have scriptures which act as eyes. They tell us what my real position is. Really, I am not an egocentric being. Really, I am not bound with this body-mind complex. The scriptures tell me that, and I know it. I understand it. Shastra chakshushi sati. My intellect, my knowledge is enlightened. I am able to comprehend it. God has been kind enough to give me that strength. Not only that, Snigdhe Swamini Marga Darshini Sati. There is a guide. God has given me a guide. He has given me a guru, a master. Smigdhe, he is full of love for me. He points out the way to me. In spite of these things, Shabhaye Tatatti Vaya, I again and again fall into the ditch of continuous birth and death. I can only be faulted and cursed by people. So though I am of this sinful nature, yet I expect God to forgive me. I realize my fault, and yet I want to be saved. Because I depend on the forgiveness of the Lord. That is the only thing by which I become ready. Svaireva yajyati gatoha madakukatte tatra apinata tavanas navadeta patra. Aham adhar gata. O Lord, even though I have gone down by my own mistakes, kukritti, purposely I have done wrong actions, svayeva, I myself have done them, purposely I have done them, and that is why I have fallen down. I realize this. But beyond your religious, the prarthana. O Shiva, tava nasmi avaleka patram. Even then, I don't expect that you will forget me. That you will let me rot there. Why? Why do I depend on you so much? You are called Pashupati. You are the protector of animals. Driptah Pashuhu Patati Yas Swayat Anbhati. A young goat, proud of its own movements, goes and falls down into a well, into a deep well. He has gone out of his own sweet way, and because of that pride, he has fallen in it. No pekshate tamatu karun kohi loka. But a person who is full of compassion, does he say that this animal has fallen out of its own sweet will, let him rot? He makes it a point to take out that colt, that young colt. Similarly, though I have made all these mistakes, but because you are full of karuna, the compassion, though I have fallen down, you are going to help me out. I depend on you, who are the ocean of compassion. So once we realize that it is God who is going to forgive us, it becomes our bounden duty to forgive others. If I want to be forgiven, I must be ready to forgive others. That is the basic condition. If I am not ready to forgive others, I can't expect God to forgive me. And without His forgiveness, there is no way out of this maya that I have got into. To attain this state of mind, we have to dwell incessantly on the merciful aspect of Shiva. We have to continuously attune our mind to think of His compassion. Our mind has to be ingrained with that idea. To begin with, we may not be able to do it incessantly, but let us at least try to do it intermittently. As we try to practice it slowly, at certain intervals, it will become our nature and we will be able to think of it all the time. Human mind is constructed in such a way that it cannot think of thoughts without words. Perhaps it is the greatest contribution of Hindu philosophers to the world philosophy, the importance of word, the shabda. It is a very potent thing, and only recently, in the science of semantics and others, the Western psychologists have tried to study the concept of word. There have been philosophers like Kumari Bhatta who have accepted word as a material object, as a dravya. So much reality has been given that whenever the world is described by Acharya Shankara, he says, Nama Rupa Karma Atma Kanti Jagat. The word, the form, and the action. This is the order he always follows. The word is always there first. There have been philosophers like Patanjali who have tried to emphasize that in the very nature of creation, first the world is created and then the form is created. just trying to point out how important the word is. Human beings are in such a way that world is very important to them. Therefore, to dwell on the mercifulness of the Lord, we have to take help of some word or the group of words. That is what is known as an incantation, as a sacred formula, as a mantra. Manana prayate yasma mantra ityabhidhiyate. It is called mantra because by continuously meaningful meditation we are able to liberate ourselves from this bondage. So some formula which is able to give us the idea that he is the protector, he is merciful, and I need protection, I need his grace. These two ideas will be present in any sacred formula. Once we receive it, we have to practice regularly, because then only it becomes a potent formula. It is something like a language. You are born in North India, say UP. From your childhood you have been reading Hindi, hearing Hindi. But then you get into such jobs that continuously you are speaking English. What happens? You are talking to a person in Hindi, but after every three words you will be uttering an English word. And if you are asked, what is the Hindi word for it? You say, I know it, it will come to my mind, it will come to my mind. But it doesn't come. If you are reminded, if somebody says, is this the word? You say, yes, yes, yes. You recognize it. So it is not that you have forgotten it. You are able to recognize it. But you are not able to use it when you want to use it. That is all. Similarly, if you take a sacred formula and do not continuously use it, you do not regularly practice it, its potency is diminished, because it is not potent enough to keep you wide awake to that consciousness. The greater the faith you have on it, the greater the devotion you have on it, its potency is increased. It is able to influence you more and more. The mantra must be practiced by oneself. Because many of you, born and brought up in Hinduism, have become accustomed to give charge of your next life to someone else. You are very particular when you have to do something about this world. So if you are going to cook food, you make it a point to go and see that it is properly cooked. But when it has to be sent to offer to the Lord, a pandit will do, you need not go and see whether it is being offered properly or not. So naturally our tendency is that whenever we think of anything to do with the other world, we want to give that responsibility to someone else. Let the pandit do it.